is evolving in interesting ways. But on our campus, when you see that over 50% take online, a lot of those students are living in the residence halls. Or, I mean, they'd rather take an online course than get up at 8 o'clock in the morning. So it's kind of blended in a different kind of way than you would imagine. And then the other thing I'd mention is relative to tuition. We have that special e-tuition, which is slightly more than in-state. But you see, you have to deal with what do you do with out-of-state students when you're teaching online, because our online degree programs have enrollments from literally all over the world. And so we developed this e-tuition that was sort of halfway between in-state and out-of-state to balance off and make it available to everyone a number of years ago with board approval. And so it's what I think has happened at UIS from my perspective, just kind of all we did in the administration was turn people loose. But I think what's happening is that as you talked about in Urbana, it's having an incredible effect on campus. That is, the teaching on campus is very high tech, and they use it even though they're meeting every day with students who maybe live on campus. The courses are all sorts of online things that are blended in, and I don't think it's one or the other. That's the important one of the reasons that Ray and our campus keeps winning these awards is that we have one faculty. And so the same faculty teaching online or teaching on campus. And consequently, I know as chancellor, when they stamp UIS on their forehead or the University of Illinois on their forehead, that it's the same degree because it's the same faculty. And that's why that Sloan, when he was talking about faculty development at Sloan, a large reason that we were able to do things as well as we have is we were able to invest in the faculty. And it just spread. Some faculty members learned that it was something enjoyable, then the next one did, and then the next one did, and now all of a sudden you have 2/3 of the faculty. So a typical load might be a new faculty member will have one online course and two on-campus courses. And I think that's what I think, Ray, they're referring to that as UIS model around the country now, right? And so there's a lot of different ways to do it, but there's just the opportunities, as you were saying, Trustee Strobel, just enormous.
Every time we come to a meeting, get together, receive what Pam described as piles, the university continues to impress each of us, the wonderment of all of the things that are going on. But I think we also need to be respectful of the, enormous size and scope of the institution and our need to rely on the committee structure to investigate and probe and challenge and rather than do all of that at the board meeting, otherwise we'll never leave this room. So
you're here.
Karen.
One of the points that was made yesterday that I think you just emphasized, Rich, was the fact that when faculty members are teaching both online and in the classroom and they're used to technology now, they're getting away from that lecture model only and integrating more and more technology into their classroom work, which as we all know, working with young people now is totally different than the way it was 25 years ago when they weren't doing computer games and having constant technology overload. So I think that's a point to keep in mind too. So, but thank you all.
Yeah, and there was another point too from yesterday. Some of our online competitors do not reveal the faculty person teaching class.
They don't.
They do not. We do, and that's we think is a great advantage for us. So just something to keep in mind.
You don't have unnamed instructors behind the courses.
That's really strange. Thank you, Karen. Tim, might we ask you to report for the hospital committee?
Sure, I'd be glad to. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for the opportunity to speak on behalf of the hospital committee. Our group met yesterday at 1 o'clock. I'd like to thank my fellow trustees for serving on the committee, Trustees Carroll, Kahn, and Tortolero. Thank the people who attended our meeting and especially those who presented. The meeting began yesterday with my attempt to review the lengthy discussion we had on medical affairs at our retreat. The attendees dutifully suffered through that. I obviously won't repeat that here, as you were all there at that meeting. President Hogan then offered us an update on conversations he and a committee have had with Larson Allen Consulting out of Minneapolis. We're beginning the process of looking into the financial feasibilities of proposed construction projects in the future. And we're very pleased that that process of looking into our options and mustering our capabilities has been going well. I think we're all cautiously optimistic about that. Next on the agenda was a review of our financial status. More details will follow here shortly, but briefly, we have seen a steady increase in our cash collections. Half of that pretty much was due to a one-time adjustment in Medicare, Medicaid payments, but the increase has also been due to decreased expenses for staffing, increased income from ancillary services. For example, we contracted with the VA to cover their radiation oncology services. And another slight increase in income, one we haven't heard of in a number of years, is a slight increase in investment income. The cash situation allows us to proceed with renovation projects. Construction actually began 9/17, so roughly a week ago. On the upgrades to our existing structures, the first issues will be those related to compliance with IDPH, Illinois Department of Public Health requirements. The $40 million additional approved renovation to existing facilities is going to require a certificate of need to proceed. Our application for that is due November of this year, and we should have a ruling on that February of 2011. Another presentation you receive here shortly this morning involves the safety program. Many impressive projects are underway, and we have received significant grants because of that work. One interesting and recent innovation that was reported in the committee meeting yesterday was the creation of a communication consult service, which is comprised of physicians, nurses, and folks in administration. Often lawsuits are born out of misunderstanding and miscommunication between patients and physicians. In general, physicians are not the best communicators, as evidenced by this report.
Did you need a report for that?
We adhere too much to the medical vernacular and sometimes are not understood, but patients are sometimes too intimidated to bring up their inquiries. So this task force acts to intervene in any situation where it's perceived that communication may not be as optimal as it should be. And this situation can be triggered by anybody, admin, nurses, physicians, patients. I think it's quite a novel idea, and it will be interesting to follow its results. So unless there's any questions, I will turn the meeting over to Dean Flaherty. Mr. DiNardo are going to give us some more in-depth briefing on the finances and safety. Any questions? Okay, guys, take it away. Thank you.
Well, good morning. And I just have to say, Trustee Court, you did a very good job in communication, and you really summed up the presentation well.
You're very kind.
I want to just start a little bit about our workload indicators. And first slide is on patient days, and this is how many days patients spent in the hospital throughout the year. And you can see that there was a decline. And if we go to the second slide, you can see on patient discharges there was a decline. Now, I want to assure the people of the board that Joe and I see this report every single day. This is one aspect of our business. This is the number of patients who are in the hospital. Joe and I follow this. We have work teams of our leaderships of both of our groups that are working to work